This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
WHO is really pleased today, World Malaria Day, during Africa Vaccination Week, to be able to announce these three countries that are going to be piloting the world's first malaria vaccine. And these three countries are Malawi, Kenya, and Ghana.
That's Dr. Mary Hamill, Senior Technical Officer for the World Health Organization's Malaria Vaccine Implementation Program. Also, we'll have a wide range of malaria stories for you as we mark World Malaria Day. In addition, South Sudan is getting $106 million to help fight famine and potential starvation. And there are new warnings today about Yemen, where the UN says the largest humanitarian crisis is taking place. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today is World Malaria Day. It's estimated there are 212 million cases worldwide. The World Health Organization says the global incidence of the disease has decreased 21% between 2010 and 2015. There's also been a 29% decrease in mortality rates during the same period. 90% of the malaria cases are in sub-Saharan Africa, but the WHO says efforts since 2001 have prevented more than 660 million infections there. The widespread use of insecticide-treated bed nets is a big reason. Nevertheless, the WHO says there are still prevention gaps. About 43% of people at risk for malaria in sub-Saharan Africa were not protected by bed nets or indoor spraying in 2015. Also, nearly 70% of pregnant women in 20 African countries did not have access to the recommended three or more doses of preventative treatment. In related news, an experimental blood test can quickly and accurately diagnose malaria from other infections, so treatment of the mosquito-borne illness can be started promptly. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The symptoms of malaria, which strikes an estimated 200 million people every year, are nonspecific. That means the fever, aches, pains, and chills in the early stages could be mistaken for any number of infections. So researchers want a test that quickly and accurately diagnoses malaria so appropriate treatment can begin, increasing a patient's chances of survival and helping prevent the disease's spread. The blood test, developed by researchers at Stanford University in California, identifies a pattern of immune system activation to determine whether a person is infected with the malaria parasite or a bacterium or virus. It looks for which genes are switched on and off, depending on the type of infection. Stanford University medical professor Purvesh Khatri and colleagues helped develop the biomarker test, which was reportedly 96% accurate.
So that's where a test like ours is useful, where you can take a blood test. You do not require an expert technician, and they are more sensitive than the rapid diagnostic tests that we have now.
Khatri notes that test is not very accurate because it looks for a molecule called an antigen, which activates an immune response to a malaria infection.
And the problem with those are that they are not sensitive enough. So treatment tends to be inappropriate, and it could take a while before malaria is diagnosed.
Khatri's work drew upon data from 40 studies involving more than 3,000 blood samples from patients with various infections. Some were known to have malaria, but there were also other tropical illnesses observed in the studies, including dengue, typhoid, and leishmaniasis. From those blood studies, investigators analyzed the activation of 2,100 different genes, looking for which ones were switched on and off with parasitic, viral, and bacterial infections. They found a group of 7 genes that were expressed in malaria compared to healthy people and those with other infectious illnesses. While the experimental blood test is accurate in diagnosing malaria, Khatri says it might also detect other parasitic diseases researchers have not yet studied. Buddy says the blood test could be reliably used in cases in which malaria is strongly suspected and confirmation of the disease is needed. Khatri presented his findings at a meeting of the European Congress of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases just before World Malaria Day this week. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Jessica. Well, three African countries are set to use the world's first malaria vaccine in selected areas beginning in 2018. Children between the ages of 5 to 17 months old from Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi will be inoculated through a program of the World Health Organization Regional Office for Africa. The injectable vaccine, RTSS, was developed to protect young children from the most deadly form of the disease. Dr. Mary Hamill is the Senior Technical Officer for the WHO's Malaria Vaccine Implementation Program in Africa. She spoke with me about the significance of the vaccine and its potential for protecting African children from the deadliest form of malaria.
WHO is really pleased today, World Malaria Day, during Africa Vaccination Week, to be able to announce these three countries that are going to be piloting the world's first malaria vaccine. And these three countries are Malawi, Kenya, and Ghana.
How will this vaccine work?
This vaccine is designed for African children specifically to prevent illness and death in those children. It works by preventing malaria symptoms before they start, but I should be clear that it isn't a perfect vaccine. So kids will still get malaria, but they'll get far less malaria and less severe malaria.
What age ranges will participate in the program?
The childhood vaccination programs in each of the countries will be rolling out this vaccine, and they'll be initiating the vaccine for these children at about 5 to 6 months of age. This vaccine is a little bit unique in that it requires 4 doses, and the last dose is given at 2 years of age. Most vaccines, most childhood vaccinations are finished by 2 years of age.
And also, despite all of the global efforts that have been taking place to reduce malaria deaths, hundreds of thousands of people still die from malaria. So what is the goal of this vaccine in terms of actually preventing deaths?
This is exactly right. There have been tremendous gains in malaria control. Even the last 5 years across Africa, malaria deaths have been reduced by 30%. But nonetheless, there are still 200 million cases of malaria and 400,000 deaths every year, and most of those are in young African children. If this vaccine works the way we expect, and if we're able to reach children with these 4 doses, tens of thousands of children's lives could be saved every year.
How long will it take before you all know that the vaccine is effective?
Well, we know that the vaccine is effective, that those trials are finished. We know that this vaccine will reduce malaria cases. We know that it will reduce severe malaria. What we need to find out through these programs is, are we able to get to the children? Are we able to reach them with these vaccine doses that are outside the usual vaccine schedule? So parents will have to come to the clinic to get the vaccine a little later than they usually do in the first year of life, and then around 2 years of age.
So overall, then, what do you think this really means in terms of reducing the deaths from malaria?
I think that if WHO recommends this vaccine for broader use, depending on the results of this pilot implementation program, this vaccine could really be an important addition to the tools that we already have, saving in addition tens of thousands of children's lives every year.
Dr. Mary Hamill is the Senior Technical Officer for the WHO's Malaria Vaccine Implementation Program in Africa. She spoke with me from Nairobi. Well, continuing our coverage of World Malaria Day, the disease was officially eliminated in the United States in the 1950s. Nevertheless, a new study says deaths or hospital stays from malaria infection are far more common in the U.S. than thought. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Lead author of the study, Dr. Diana Koo, says malaria cases in the U.S. usually are blamed on people who visited other countries.
Most of the cases we get now are from travelers, return travelers, or foreign visitors. Compared to other travel-associated diseases, malaria outnumbers other diseases by a lot. Every year we see about 1,500 cases of malaria compared to like dengue fever is only about 259. This is data from the past 15 years.
Ku is an epidemiologist at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health in the western state of California. Between 2000 and 2014, about 21,000 people were admitted to American hospitals due to complications from malaria. More than 4,800 had severe malaria, so they had such problems as renal failure, coma, and acute respiratory distress. More than 180 of those patients died. Men account for 60% of malaria-related hospital admissions in the United States. Ku says overall, it can be prevented.
A lot of people are not taking the necessary precautions. There's anti-malarial preventive medications. There's mosquito repellents, sleeping under a bed net. These are all very effective, but a lot of people are not doing it.
She says some travelers may find taking precautions to be inconvenient, while others are trying to save money. The study found the average cost for being hospitalized with malaria in the U.S. is nearly $26,000. When you add up all the bills between 2000 and 2014, it's more than $500 million. While these U.S. cases are attributed to travelers, Ku says that could change. Mosquitoes are in abundant supply.
The vectors that can carry malaria are present in the U.S. There's always a possibility that malaria might start transmitting again in the U.S.
The prevalence of malaria in the U.S. prior to the 1950s led to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
It was very prevalent at the time, especially during the war times, and that's the reason why the CDC was actually established. It was to combat the malaria problem.
Most of the malaria cases in the U.S. are caused by the Plasmodium falciparum parasite. It's blamed for the majority of the malaria cases and deaths worldwide. Ku encourages U.S. doctors to consider malaria as a possible diagnosis when a patient has a fever and they have just returned from travel abroad. But she says travelers have the responsibility to take preventive measures before going to countries where malaria infection is possible. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In other news around the continent, South Sudan is getting $106 million to help fight famine and potential starvation. Reuters reports the money comes from the World Bank and the African Development Bank. Famine has been declared in two counties in Unity State, but conflict has put millions at risk within the country and has caused more than 1 million others to flee to neighboring countries. Meanwhile, there are new warnings today about Yemen, where the UN says the largest humanitarian crisis is taking place. It says nearly 20 million people are in desperate need of food and other assistance after nearly 2 years of war coupled with poverty and political unrest. The World Health Organization says since the fighting began, there have been at least 325 attacks on health facilities, schools, markets, roads, and other infrastructure. The International Committee of the Red Cross says the humanitarian crisis in Yemen is deteriorating fast. It's calling for a massive international effort to relieve the suffering. It says Yemen faces the risk of famine. Also, the cholera outbreak that began last year now numbers 24,000 cases, but infections have slowed down of late following intervention. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 19 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Today is World Malaria Day, and the WHO announces three African countries are set to use the world's first malaria vaccine, and an experimental blood test can quickly and accurately diagnose malaria from other infections. Also, there are new warnings today about Yemen, where the UN says the largest case of humanitarian crisis is taking place. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, at least 27 people are reported dead in Kenya following a collision today between a trailer truck and a bus. More than 20 others are injured. Police tell the Associated Press the accident occurred near Makindu on the major road linking Nairobi and Mombasa. The cause of the crash has not been reported yet. Road accidents kill about 3,000 people in Kenya every year. And Kenya is in the midst of a 90-day independent audit of the country's voter list ahead of the August elections. Experts say the review could see tens of thousands of names removed. Mohammed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
Earlier this year, during a mass voter registration exercise, the electoral body expected to register 6 million Kenyans in 1 month. Political parties set a target of 10 million. They all missed the mark. The drive saw 3.7 million people registered. Samuel Ogola says people routinely overestimate the population in a given area. He should know. He is in charge of population statistics with the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics.
It is human. If your expectation is not met, if you are feeling you are 10 and you are told you are only 8, you may feel that that is not it, and that is human nature. But again, we must learn to rely on facts, and figures don't lie.
Between March 2013 and March 2017, Kenya's voter list grew by 5.3 million people. The list now stands at 19.6 million. That is just under half of the total population of around 45 million. Opposition groups and some political observers have raised doubts given the large proportion of Kenya's population that is under the age of 18. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission assigned international auditing firm KPMG to the job of checking the list. With allegations of fraud already circulating since last year, a voter register, accepted as correct by all political parties, is seen as key to ensuring peaceful nationwide elections in August. KPMG says it is using data from multiple sources, including recently issued identification cards and passports. In a recent press conference, Gerald Kasimu of KPMG said they would leave nothing to chance during the process.
We will verify every single name in the register against third-party data. And it's important to emphasize the need for comparison against the National Register of Births and Deaths for purposes of ensuring any perceptions or misperceptions around potential for underage voters being in the register, or the potential for deceased voters being in the register is addressed.
But some government records may be incomplete or out of date, says Peter Nyakwara of the National Council for Population and Development. The last census was done in 2009.
The problem we are having in Africa, and the Kenyan included, we have not invested in vital statistics. Registration parts, deaths, which should be continuous on a daily basis, so that they can have any minute we are able to know how many people have died today, how many have survived, so that every month, every year, we are able to know this is where the population is moving to.
KPMG is expected to hand over the updated voter register, as well as its findings and recommendations, to the Electoral Commission and the National Assembly next month. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
With a tremendous military pressure on the Islamic State militants in Syria and Iraq, a growing number of foreign fighters are fleeing ISIS strongholds. Tunisia is said to have thousands of its citizens fighting with ISIS. That's why Tunisian authorities are watching the country's borders closely and getting ready to deal returnees from Syria and Iraq. Among those monitoring the situation is Dr. Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi.
This is one of the main challenges in Tunisia, how to deal with the flux of returnees, with possible flux of returnees. Already there has been 800 returnees who have been arrested and are now in jail. but how to deal with them in terms of de-radicalization, in terms of whether they have to be sentenced in a court of law, then you have to provide evidence that they were involved in a certain crime, because there were also people who went to Syria for humanitarian reasons. Not everybody who's coming back from Syria is necessarily a terrorist. So how do you discriminate or separate the terrorists from other people who went there possibly for humanitarian reasons or to help the Syrian people and things like that? There are doctors also who went there to assist the victims. So it is a very difficult situation, but I am confident that the Tunisian government is ready for that, to deal with that challenge, and is getting programs in place to deal with the challenge.
Is Libya still considered a source of terrorists infiltrating and crossing into Tunisia?
Of course, that also remains a challenge, because we have a big border with Libya, although the border now is more secure than it was in the past in terms of the army getting much more involved in monitoring the borders, and the police also. But the potential is there of infiltration of terrorists from Libya. As we know, Daesh does have a presence in Libya into the thousands, and at least 1,000 of them are Tunisians who had joined Daesh in Libya or in Syria. So it is a challenge. We hope that the situation in Libya will improve. The future of Tunisia is tied, whether we like it or not, to the situation in Libya. If the situation in Libya improves, then it will help Tunisia tremendously. If Libya continues to deteriorate, then it will also affect Tunisia in many ways, economically, politically, socially, and of course, security-wise.
Talking about the economy, tourism in Tunisia was negatively impacted by instability and terrorist acts in Tunisia. Is that still the case?
Yes, the biggest hits were in 2015 when we had the attacks in Sousse and Bardo. And since then, the tourism sector has been badly damaged. I think it is recovering. There are signs, the positive signs, that since the beginning of 2017, of an increase in tourists coming from Europe, from Algeria, from Russia, from many countries. So the numbers are showing a steady increase, not yet at the level that they were before the revolution, before the Arab Spring. But there is hope that this summer we will see a very strong tourism presence. The security situation in Tunisia has improved tremendously since 2015. The police and the army have been trained, have been equipped to deal with the problem. And I think the security situation now is much, much better than it was 2 years ago.
That was Dr. Radwan Mazmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Salee. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Zimbabwe's persistent economic woes cloud its 37th Independence Day celebration. An in-depth discussion on Zimbabwe on the next Straight Talk Africa. at 18:30 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.